We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hello, this is Lee Bright, filling in for Bobby Mack. The word for this hour is Mark. And the Ingalls Advantage talk line is 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line, 71307. I've got Tom Davis on the line. We've got about 6 minutes left. We've got three callers. We're going to try to get through all three. So as soon as you ask your question, we're going to have Tom answer and go to the next question.
Sounds good.
Hello, Rusty. You're on the phone with Senator Tom Davis.
Hi, Lee. Hi, Mr. Davis.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to hear you on the radio, and I'm very curious about the subject because I don't know much about it. I'm for it, but I don't know as much about it as I should. My question is this. If it's school choice and treating the school district and the school education process as a business, as a market-driven thing, I'm all for that. But what I'm curious about is that inner cities or rural areas that are typically underserved and have poor children who are generally the problem for dragging down scores and dragging down, the educational system, not by their own doing, but just simply by nature. If you're going to have school choices, what's going to happen to areas when the schools are literally drained of students because parents are saying, oh, I don't want my child in that. I want my child in this area, or I want my child in this school, or I want my child in this district. What happens to these schools that are left with just slim pickings of children but still have to operate and teach the children? Because, I mean, the school that I grew up in, I went to school at Serene Elementary in Greenville, it closed. It closed because of that.
And it right. You make an excellent point, and this is the idea. Those that have lesser means, those that don't have as much income as others, I would put purchasing power in their hands. I would put the ability for those students, put purchasing power, tuition money in their hands. I would also provide for transportation, because a lot of times these kids, it's not enough just to put an education tuition voucher in their hands. They've got to get to school. I would provide for that. And you're right, that rural areas may not have schools right now that are up to par. But if you create demand, and if you empower demand, and you empower these families and put purchasing power in their hands, supply will come and meet that demand. And so you have to have faith in markets. And so if you empower parents and you put purchasing power in their hands, you're going to find supply filling that need. And again, if this doesn't work, if people are falling through the cracks, if people don't have access to good education, I think you need to make provisions for that. But again, let's try this. Let's see if this is a good way of getting that 24th in the nation funding put to better use. Okay, so nothing's infallible, and even markets sometimes have dislocations. But as an initial starting point, I think that's where we need to go. Hello?
Yes, and now we need to go to Kitty in Simpsonville. Ray. Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to Ray. Ray's next in Taylor's.
Hello.
Hello, Ray. Tom Davis here. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. I hate to bust your bubble, but my wife died of cancer 3.5 years ago.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. Okay. I heard medical marijuana would help her and all that, so I went to my doctor, and he wrote a prescription, and I got medical marijuana. So you don't need that bill. The doctors already have that power.
Well, not in South Carolina they don't. You may have had a doctor.
That's in South Carolina. I'm in South Carolina. My wife died in South Carolina, and she took medical marijuana in South Carolina right here in Taylor's. Now, it kind of helped her appetite a little, but
Yeah, it stimulates appetite, and especially if you're undergoing chemotherapy or things of that nature. But it is not legal in South Carolina right now for a doctor to authorize patients to take cannabis. That is not currently
legal. How come he did that? He wrote the
prescription
for me right here in Greenville, South Carolina.
I don't know, Ray. I can't speak to that. I don't know, Ray. I can just tell you that in South Carolina, it is currently not legal for a doctor to authorize a patient to take cannabis.
All right, and now we've got Conyers or Kitty that from Simpsonville wanting to talk about school choice. I know we're up against getting up against a break, but you're on with Senator Davis.
Hi, Senator Davis. May God bless you in
Kitty.
Jesus' name. Okay, first I want to say I'm all for everything: medical marijuana, offshore drilling, school choice. I'm amen to that. Now, and I want to ask you about. Have you ever taken a field sobriety test yourself?
I never have. I've never been in a situation where I've had to undergo a field sobriety test.
Well, if you ask if you ask some people that specialize in that, they say that it is the worst thing. It is nearly impossible to pass it, even when you're sober.
Yeah, I don't. I really can't speak to that. All I can say is this, and this is something an important point to make. Just if this bill passes and if it's signed into law and if it becomes legal for doctors to authorize patients to take cannabis, that still is not a license to operate a vehicle under the influence of cannabis any more than it would be to operate it under the influence of alcohol. So. There still would be a restriction and prohibition in that regard, ma'am.
And Senator Davis, I want to get to a couple of these texts if we can.
Sure.
How would this affect drug-free employers, and how would it affect workers' comp?
Well, again, employers have the right to control their workplace. They have the right to set their rules and regulations. They have the right to establish their policies. Nothing in this bill would compel an employer to do anything other than what it wants to do in its workplace. In regard to workers' comp, I think what you would find is that in a lot of instances, when somebody undergoes an injury, cannabis can be a way of helping get them back to work. I mean, particularly if there's a period of convalescence or a period of physical therapy and a lot of pain. Right now, you have doctors giving patients opiates and opioids to help them through that hard and difficult time, which ends up creating more problems. If they were able to authorize cannabis use for that, I think you would find employees coming back to the job much more quickly and without something addictive in them. So I think it'll be very positive in terms of workers' compensation.
Well, I think most, if not all, the calls were positive. I had one texter complaining that everybody was for and we wouldn't take any calls against, but we didn't get any calls against, I don't believe, on the medical marijuana. So we took all the calls. You took all the calls. You stood in the batter's box, and I think you hit it out of the park on most of the questions. Of course, you've been well-versed on this and have been dealing with this issue for years and stood in the well of the Senate. And, it was really watching those parents bring their children, and telling those stories and having to go out of state and be separated from the rest of the family when they were trying to get the medical treatment they need. And the government standing in the way of it was something that really, and you did a good job of solidifying how I felt about the issue. But I see that, there's still some division there, but there was none on the calls, but we did get some on the text. I don't have time to read all the texts before the break, but we'll get to many of them as we can. And on the school choice bill, do you feel we've got about a minute left? Give me a brief synopsis on the support you're getting for the school choice bill.
Well, I think there's more and more support, Lee. I mean, I think people are starting to realize in general, and certainly legislators in Columbia, that money isn't the answer to all of our problems. I mean, when you're spending 24th in the nation in per pupil funding and you're getting 49th or 50th in terms of outcomes, I mean, common sense suggests that something in the existing system is wrong. And why in the world would you address the problem by putting more money into the very same system that has shown it can't generate the outcomes that South Carolinians deserve? I mean, we trust markets in every other aspect of our life. We accept as a truth that when providers compete, and when consumers have choices, you get a better product at a lower cost. I mean, that fundamental principle is what made us the most prosperous nation in the world. Why can't we have that same principle animating our system of K-12 education in South Carolina? That's what school choice is all about, and I think that's why it's going to have progress this year.
Well, Tom Davis, thank you for being very generous with your time. Senator Tom Davis from Beaufort, he's been a freedom fighter down there in Columbia for many years, and I personally appreciate the job he's doing. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Lee. I appreciate you having me. Take care.
We'll talk on the other side. The word for the hour again is Mark. Hello, this is Lee Bright filling in for Bobby Mack today. Our word for the hour is Mark. And our Ingalls Advantage talk line is 1-800-347-1063. Our Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. We just had a great talk with Tom Davis on medical marijuana the last hour. Now we're privileged to have Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line. We're going to talk a little about offshore drilling and some other issues as much as he has time for. Congressman Duncan, glad to have you on the show.
Well, Lee, thanks for having me on this show, and thanks for filling in for Bobby Mack. And, you know, it's just it's a crazy time in Washington right now with partial government shutdown due to the intransigence of the Democrats not wanting to negotiate with the president. It's an issue of border security, national security. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've been down to the border. I've seen how porous it is. I have seen where barriers work. They work in Israel. They work here. We're not talking about anything that's not out of the realm of possibility to stop human trafficking, drug trafficking, the threat of terrorism, and illegal immigration. You know, it's against the law for anyone to enter this country without a permission slip or a visa. And we see illegal immigrants crossing the border every day. We see hordes of caravans coming this way. There's 2,000 more. Or it's actually growing from Honduras, crossed over in Guatemala, headed this way, because they think they can come in this country and receive benefits and take American jobs, and it's just wrong. So we saw last week a Border Patrol agent down in the McAllen sector, which is near Brownsville, Texas, McAllen, Texas, and he said that they had apprehended 133 illegal aliens that had crossed over into America, and they were not from Mexico or Central America. They were from other countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Ecuador. They were not the typical illegal immigrants that you hear about. And so this is a national security issue. Just since I've been in Congress, we've had the Iranian Quds Force, their Revolutionary Guard, their elite, their Delta Force, their Rangers, their SEALs, if you put it in the American perspective, trying to cross the American border, our porous southern border, and come to Washington, D.C. to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the U.S. at a restaurant that I or some of my colleagues could have been dining at the same time. Luckily, we were able to apprehend that person and stop that that potential assassination attack. But that's just since I've been in Congress for 8 years. President Trump has a lot more intel than I do about who is coming across. The 133 individuals that I talked about earlier were the ones that were apprehended. What bothers me, and if you want to use the term keeps me up at night, is the fact that we know that those were the ones that were apprehended. We know there were others that were not apprehended that were able to get across. What countries were they coming from? What is their intent? Are they coming for jobs or are they coming for other nefarious purposes? We know that human trafficking and sex trafficking and children, we know that drugs are coming across our border every day. We see what happens when these illegal aliens, you know, get involved in crime and kill police officers or people like Kate Steinle and others. We see where illegals have been arrested.
Yes, I think we've got a little technical problem on the line. We'll try to get Congressman Duncan back on the line. And I think we may have him back on now. Sorry, these... I feel like I'm in one of those Can You Hear Me Now commercials, but he may have gone into a tunnel. He was talking a little bit about immigration and some of the issues, and you know, we've got those, obviously, as a nation right now. It's very concerning when you look and listen to some of the speeches. I'm sure you've seen them that the Democrats gave about protecting our borders and about immigration and some of those issues. And now that they've totally gotten on the other side, and it's a dangerous precedent in our nation when folks are doing everything they can to oppose the president, even when it's in our nation's best interest, clearly, to protect our borders, to protect us on immigration. And they totally oppose him because they don't like him. And that's just wrong. I mean, they're totally opposed, even when it's issues that they have been public on and been supportive of. They're totally flipping their positions to do everything to oppose this president. And I believe we have Jeff Duncan back on the line. I didn't know if you were going to one of those garages or what happened to you.
No, I'm actually sitting outside. I have a great cell signal, so don't know what happened. I think it may have been the NSA, you know, they're spying on Americans still, and that's another issue that we conservatarians and libertarians really have to think about. But, you know, I was talking about national security and border security, and we have a crisis, and that's what the shutdown's about. Nancy Pelosi won't travel down to the White House and meet with the president to try to open the government back up while also securing this country, securing our poor southern border. And they won't even negotiate, even try to compromise. It is ridiculous that we're into this shutdown, like I call the Pelosi-Schumer shutdown, because they're being very intransigent as far as negotiations go.
Well, it's I was mentioning why you're off the air there. It's amazing. There's so many in this age of technology. There's so many of those YouTube videos out there with these Democrats supporting Trump on all these issues years ago. But now that he's leading the fight, they have flipped sides. It's amazing. I don't know how they do it.
Well, I don't either. And they do it because the mainstream media won't show those clips. The mainstream media, other than Fox News and, like you said, YouTube and conservative talk radio, won't play all that. So the Americans across the land are getting a very skewed opinion about this shutdown, a very liberal view of what's going on the border. And the mainstream media will not play the videos of the same positions that Chuck Schumer had, President Obama had, and Nancy Pelosi had back when they voted for the 2006 Secure Fence Act. 79 existing senators today, 79 senators voted for the 2006 Secure Fence Act. Nancy Pelosi voted for the 2006 Secure Fence Act to build so many miles, hundreds of miles of fencing along the border. They believed in barriers back then, but because of their hatred of Donald Trump, they're not willing to get back to that position, open the government up, and secure this country.
Well, Congressman Duncan, we're fixing to go into a break. I wanted to just also reach out to our listeners. Congressman Duncan's willing to take calls at 800-347-1063, the Ingalls Advantage talk line. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307, and the word for the hour is Mark. We look to hear from you on the other side, and we'll have Congressman Duncan on the other side. Hello, this is Lee Bright filling in for Bobby Mack. Our Ingalls Advantage talk line is 1-800-347-1063. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. And if you want to text in for the $1,000 bankroll, that is 72881, and you'll text Mark to 72881. Right now we've got Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line. We've got a caller in that has a question for him. He's going to take some calls, and we're talking about drilling and immigration. So I've got a caller interested in talking about those things. David is actually in Indiana right now calling on both those issues.
Hey, first-time caller, buddy.
Hey, great to have you on.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. The thing about the border, that all this information I'm getting about the trash being left in Arizona, the prayer rugs being found. Back in the day, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats wanted border barriers, not walls, so that they could be jumped over, cut through, or dug under. We need to make sure that we support the president getting this wall built, keeping the government shut down if need be until he gets the money for it. Dig those trenches and fill them up with concrete so they can't be dug under. Make sure the walls are tall enough and smooth enough they can't be climbed over. And what was the other topic we were going to talk about?
Offshore drilling.
Offshore drilling, exactly. It is plenty safe enough, and we shouldn't be held hostage by the low country, because those jobs that can be produced by that drilling can benefit the entire state, not just a few people. I mean, it's when oil is spilled, it's a bad thing, no doubt. But it can be cleaned. It can be limited. The damage can be minimized. So we just need to be smart about it. But we shouldn't be held hostage by the low country. And that's all I got to say about it, buddy, bro.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Did you have a question for the congressman? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And David's gone. So, and I appreciate it. You know, I think Trump has, the president has actually worked with a lot of companies on different prototypes to make sure that whatever barrier border wall we build along the southwest border is impenetrable. It is deep enough with ground sensors and things to thwart the ability for drug cartels and smugglers to actually go under it. Smooth walls, walls with certain apparatuses on the top to deter people from crawling over and climbing over. I've been down to the Nogales sector in Arizona, and there's fencing along that sector, pipe fencing. You may have seen Jim Acosta was down in Texas where there was a portion, and he actually made the president's case that there was nothing going on where the barrier was. He needs to go over to where there is no barrier and see all the activity over there. But out in Nogales, when we looked at the standing out in the middle of nowhere looking at this fencing, I just happened to notice some handprints on the piping, dusty handprints where somebody had shimmied over those pipes because there was nothing at the top to deter them from climbing over. I think the president's worked with the right prototypes and selected the right prototype to build along that border to deter any of that. And, Lee, we hadn't really talked about offshore drilling, but, you know, the five-year plan that the president's put forward for offshore natural gas and oil leases opens up the area in the Atlantic for exploration. The first thing that needs to happen is seismic needs to be drug out there to find out what assets may be there, whether it's oil or gas and whether they're recoverable quantities and how deep they are and et cetera. That needs to happen first. We need to find out what might be out there. We may find that there's an abundance of natural gas out there. It just found 32 trillion cubic feet off the coast of Suriname and Guyana, off the coast of South America, 32 trillion cubic feet. What if we find 32 trillion cubic feet off the coast of South Carolina of natural gas? Then South Carolina's playing a part in the energy renaissance going on in this country. We've got energy jobs onshore to support the offshore activity. We believe, everyone believes, that where these fields are well over the visible horizon. You'd never know the activity was going on offshore unless you got in a boat and went out there. And if you get in a boat and go out there, take a fishing rod with you, because in the Gulf of Mexico, that's where all the sport fishers go for the marlin and the billfish and the tuna and whatnot. They go out to the rigs. And so what you're going to find out there is good, clean production of natural gas, if that's what it is. And guess what? We can use the port of Georgetown to be revitalized to be an LNG export hub. So you bring that natural gas to the beach, you convert it into liquefied form, you put it on a ship, and then you send it to Europe. It's hungry for American natural gas to offset and limit their reliance on Putin's Russia, where they get their natural gas from now. That has been a lever of influence. The spigot has been cut off and cut on as Russia tried to influence politics in Western and Eastern Europe. And so natural gas from South Carolina sent to Spain or Portugal as an import hub is much closer than Lake Charles or Houston or somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico that has to go all the way around Florida to get in the Atlantic to go to Europe. From South Carolina, it's a pretty straight shot. So now would play a part in the geopolitics of energy.
And the Caribbean is starved for energy. I mean,
absolutely.
Right
they're,
off our
they're
coast.
Hungry for it. Well, what they see happening is Venezuela, a socialist country, is imploding and not being able to provide them the energy they need. So the Caribbean would definitely benefit from those energy sources. Now, you know, I've been on the record a long time for supporting offshore energy, and I'm going to continue to do that because I know the dynamics off our coast are a lot different than you find in the ultra deep water of the Gulf of Mexico, where deep water horizon happened. Deep water horizon was in 5,600 feet of water down to the seabed where the pipe ruptured. We don't have 5,600 feet off the coast of South Carolina where we're talking about. We have a very shallow, gradually sloping seabed. So we're talking about much shallower water. So there's no apples to apples comparison. It's actually apples to zebras comparison between off the coast of South Carolina and the Gulf of Mexico.
Did you see Dick Harpootlian's bill not to allow any infrastructure to be built for natural gas? Or any kind of industry for offshore drilling? Did you see that?
I didn't, but it's being short-sighted because, you know, the kind of money that would come into South Carolina from the offshore industry is incredible. In fact, we believe there'd be about $1.5 billion over the course of 20 years in cumulative state and local tax revenues. So what you have is you have offshore development, you have offshore energy production, but onshore you have businesses that support that offshore activity. Most people, Lee, only think about the energy jobs, being the guys in the hard hats and the oily uniforms out on the derrick turning the drill. But what you have is those are good-paying long-term jobs are out there for 12-on, 12-off type shifts, but they have to be supported. That industry that supports them is onshore. And if you go down to Louisiana and drive on Highway 90 from Lafayette down to Houma and Thibodaux and on to Port Fourchon, what you're going to see is business after business after business after business after business supporting the offshore industry. That's providing drilling mud and casing and widgets that you go in there, HVAC repair, transportation. But you also see those companies have pickup trucks, and they're blowing engines, and they have to be serviced. And the workers that are onshore supporting offshore activity, they're going to local restaurants, and they're tipping their waitresses. Those companies are supporting ball teams, the United Way and the Chamber of Commerce. They're tithing at their local churches. It's a trickle-down that is tremendous economic benefit for the local communities. Then the state of South Carolina gets not only corporate and personal income taxes from those folks, local communities get sales tax, and the state of South Carolina would benefit from what's called revenue sharing. So all the energy that was produced offshore, the revenues that come from that, South Carolina would benefit that. What we're shooting for is a 37.5% revenue sharing back to the state, which is the trend in Wyoming and other places where federal land is producing resources. We believe that we can do that in South Carolina at 37.5% revenue sharing. That's another economic boom for the state.
That's great. Well, we're going into a break now, but we've got Congressman Jeff Duncan is going to be with us on the other side. The Ingalls Advantage talk line, if you want to call in with a question for the congressman, is 800-347-1063. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. Look forward to talking with Jeff Duncan some more on the other side of the break. Hey, this is Lee Bright filling in for Bobby Mack. The Ingalls Advantage talk line is 800-347-1063. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. And also we've got the $1,000 bankroll if you'll text Mark to 72881. That is Mark to 72881. We actually have Congressman Jeff Duncan, who's been very generous with his time, still on the line. We've got a caller in, and we've got several questions on the text. So Kyle from Spartanburg has a question on offshore drilling. Hey, Kyle, we have you on the line with Congressman Duncan.
How you doing, Congressman Duncan? How you doing, Lee?
Doing great.
I'm good, Kyle.
I live in Spartanburg now. I've actually only lived here about 2 years. I am a Charleston native. I grew up right there in North Charleston on the Ashley River, shrimping, fishing, playing in the swamp. I mean, it's in my blood. I understand people's concern with the offshore drilling. I do. Everybody wants their little slice of heaven out there on the coast to be protected. But I also understand that South Carolina needs to play its part in the energy role. I guess my question is, and it's a loaded question because there's no guarantee of accidents not happening. But I guess what facilities and what steps are we taking if we do go towards offshore drilling? We keep spills from happening as much as possible.
So that's a great question. You know, we don't know what's out there. We don't know whether there's natural gas or oil. So the first thing we need to do is drag some seismic out there and find out what resources may be there and whether they're recoverable, whether it's even economically beneficial to recover them. So we really can't make an intelligent decision until we know. So we don't need to be short-sighted and just say absolutely no. Let's find out what might be there, because we might find that there's an abundance of natural gas out there. You don't spill natural gas. And natural gas would actually benefit the global economy, with us being having the ability to export that to Europe and play a part in the geopolitics of energy for right from little old South Carolina. If we find oil out there, I'm willing to have, and I've always said this, I'm willing to have the conversation on whether South Carolina wants to play a part in the energy renaissance with oil out there. But we have learned a lot from Deepwater Horizon, and mechanisms are already in place to take care of any well blowouts or whatnot, because we have learned a tremendous amount since that, and rightly so. And so I think the precautions are there. We're drilling oil every day all over this globe, and when there are accidents that happen, you don't hear about them anymore because they're taken care of rather rapidly. The thing about South Carolina that differs from, say, Deepwater Horizon is just the depth of the water where we believe those resources are. It's just not as deep, and a man can handle any sort of event that happens a lot quicker and a lot more reliable.
And I understand that. Again, I'm from Charleston. I've done a lot of offshore fishing, so I'm pretty aware of that. In the case, I guess, that we do find possibly natural gas, which I guess would be the preferred material to find, are we going to try and utilize that in our own state power stations and stuff like that? I know, I think cross-generating station there in Cross is talking about going to natural gas. I know some of the ones in the upstate have already started moving to natural gas in lower North Carolina.
Yeah, there's a Duke Energy just converted a coal-fired power plant to natural gas over in Williamston, opened up in the spring of last year. So absolutely, it would be much cheaper for our South Carolina ratepayers if we're using gas produced off our coast and not having to be piped from Louisiana or Texas. And so absolutely, South Carolina would benefit from that, and we'd definitely benefit from the jobs and the tax revenues.
And I'm glad you said that. I actually just left the Duke Mooresboro site where they've converted over to natural gas. I'm a crane technician. I work on cranes. That's what I do. And just seeing the process from going somewhere like these purely coal stations to the natural gas stations, their footprint is so much smaller. They're so much cleaner. The process just seems to be a lot better.
Absolutely. And Europe sees that as well. Europe wants our natural gas. They want to lessen their dependence on Russia, and South Carolina could play a part in that because it's a lot closer from South Carolina, Portugal, or Spain than it is from Texas, Louisiana. So we would, if we found natural gas and we could build an LNG export terminal in Georgetown, revitalize that port, then we're exporting natural gas to Europe, and it's a win-win for state and for the nation and for global politics.
Oh, absolutely. And just as a low country native, you know, I want to say that not everybody is against this. And you know, again, I understand that, you know, people that live out on the beach, they live out on the coast, live out on the river, everybody loves their view and being able to do that stuff. And again, I am a product of that. You know, I spent all my time out there on the river fishing and shrimping and doing whatnot.
We're coming up against a thing that. Kyle, I hate to cut you off, but we're coming up against a hard break, and that's in about 30 seconds. Congressman Duncan, you've been very generous with your time. I appreciate the fight you're fighting up in Washington. You're one of the good guys, and there's few of you. So thank you for coming out on the show, and I thank you for what you do.
Well, Lee, thank you. We didn't mention, you know, the March for Life in Washington right now. I'm very, very pro-life. We need to protect babies. I need to protect the unborn. I know your stance on that. I hope you'll talk about that on the other side of the hour. God bless you, and may God continue to bless America.
Thank you so much.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.